Blog Talk Radio.
John L. Brown, author and filmmaker, native of Lake Charles, Louisiana, is taking his expose on race relations in America, Mentally Blind, Open Your Eyes, to another level by doing a documentary entitled The Mentally Blind in America. The documentary will open the viewer's eyes to homelessness, poverty, hunger, the real rules of the criminal justice system, and other poverty-related issues that challenge underemployed, unemployed, and homeless people in American post-recession. The Mentally Blind in America, a documentary, will enlighten people of color and people in poverty on how to restore their credit rating and expunge their criminal records. The Mentally Blind in America, a documentary coming this fall. Real people, real stories. The Mentally Blind, Open Your Eyes, a documentary on race, poverty, the recession's aftermath, and more. Follow our post on Facebook's The Mentally Blind in America. The Mentally Blind in America.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the talk show, Uplifting Communities, with Don and Ms. J.
Hello.
And today we have a really good special guest on today. But before I go any farther, I'm going to go ahead on and turn it over to Ms. J so Ms. J can bring our special guest on. Go ahead on, Ms. J.
Absolutely. I'm so excited to have Dr. Williams on today. Because her story is really about her and her adventures, but what she did was she took her story, and she made it accessible to teach kids about math and science, and I love both those, math and science. So when I found her, I was so excited. We've been friends, but I'm so glad she's on the show today. Before we get started, I'm going to let Dr. Williams tell you a little bit about herself, and then we're going to jump into this interview.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Ms. J, John, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm so pleased to be here. A little bit about me. I'm originally from the Caribbean, born in Guyana and grew up in Barbados. So I would say half and half. Came up to college in Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, and from there came up to Harvard for medical school, where I did both my MD and master's in public health, fell in love with surgery while I was in medical school and decided that I was going to become a surgeon, and so trained as a urologic surgeon, and during that journey just continued to really dedicate my time as available to mentoring young girls, became members of both Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority and later on the Lynx, Boston Lynx, and so just had a commitment to just making a difference in others' lives based on sort of what I was able to, you know, the pearls I was able to pick up along the way, and just committed to encouraging others. And through that experience, it became clear to me that I really had a passion about, you know, kind of how can I really parlay my journey into something that empowered girls and kids of color specifically. And so that's a very short bit about, you know, who I am. I have a mother who's a science teacher, a dad who's a journalist, so they had a significant impact on my love of writing and reading and my love of science. I have a twin brother. I am married to a wonderful man for the last 25 years, who he is also a physician and a businessman, and we have one son, and we live in Boston, Massachusetts.
Wow. You've had quite a journey. You know, you have a lot of, you're really gifted in a lot of areas, but, you know, you talk about you've always been to her children. So let's talk about that in young ladies specifically.
Sure.
I think, you know, a lot of times people think we grow out of our community, but I think it's pretty awesome sometimes when we remember the community that we came from. And I think you're reaching back not only gives the young ladies the hope that they could be more than what they are, more than they dream to be, by working with someone like you. What is the, you know, interactions that you have with the young girls? Because it has to be very impressive, because you came from a pretty much a humbling background, you know, just average parents.
Oh, yes. And one of the interactions that I have, and I think that I think really defines how I try to interact with young ladies that I mentor is really to meet them where they are and to realize and help them to understand that they and I are no different. And there's a poem by Edgar Allan Guest that I love, which says, you know, it's called Equipment. And it basically says we all have the same equipment. We have the same brains, the same eyes, the same hands, the same ears. We have all of the basic components that we need to live a successful life. And so to really meet them where they are and to tell them the stories, and one of the things that I love and the reason I have become an author is that I'm a storyteller. And even I think about how I function in my daily interactions with patients, much of it is putting together their story and based on their story coming to an assessment and a diagnosis of what's wrong with them and then, you know, coming up with solutions and plans in terms of how we're going to help them. So I am ultimately a storyteller and it's woven into all aspects of my life. And so when I interact with young ladies, I share with them, you know, the journey that I've been on from a perspective of all of the various stories that have made up my life, because we are all just an accumulation of stories. And one of the things that I like to empower young people about is this notion about owning your stories, being able to tell them, and being able to use them to bless others. And the thing that I think when I think about what is the first story that I really remember that had just a significant impact and was really something that was pivotal in terms of my life was being in an all-girls school when I was 13 and deciding at that time that I wanted to be a doctor and finding out that one of the subjects that I needed to do medicine was physics. And I was in an all-girls school that did not offer physics. They had determined that girls did not need to take physics. And so based on a number of events which really involved my parents advocating, you know, people advocating for me to be able to do what I needed to do, I then transferred to the boys' school where I was the only girl in my class to start. There were two other girls who joined the class later, but I then did my entire schooling, all of my subjects, in a class of boys. And so that was the first time that I ran into what I called a limit, where it was, well, you're not supposed to do this, this is not for you, and how I was able and my parents were able to turn that around and to not be discouraged because someone has said that you can't do something. And so I start from there with the young ladies that I work with, which is we all will face these things that people tell us you can't do, or they look at you and they assume, they make assumptions about what you're capable of, or based on who your family is, or based on where you're from, or based on how you look, that you are not capable. And I'm here as a shining example to say that you cannot be defeated, you will not be defeated, that no one makes the choice for who you can be other than yourself. And your mind is your most powerful asset, and you have the ability to choose what you choose to believe and what you choose to accept. And so based on that, I mean, that's usually the starting ground, that it is just a very kind of casual, loving but empowering, and also holding people, you know, holding girls to be accountable, which is that you can't, hard work is the fundamental foundation of everything. You cannot get to anywhere without working hard. So you've got to be able to commit that if you want something, you have to work for it. You can't get around it.
Yes,
that's right.
That's right. And that's very powerful to start them there, because people, like you said, people judge you. So they look at you and assume, oh, she's this or she's that, not knowing your beginning. And the fact that you put that beginning out there first, hey, I'm just like you. But this is how I got here. Now I can help you if you're ready. You know what I mean? And so you're giving them an option. And that's a big deal, because our youth need an option. They need to know that, you know, nothing, I love celebrities, so this is nothing negative against them. I love athletes. But they need to know there's other heroes out there, other heroes. And it's important, because everybody's not going to be a basketball player or a football player. But if you study hard, you could be a doctor. I bet you we can get more doctors and we can get more athletes. So,
that's,
you know, we got to put that math and science and that reading as a focus for our young people, because – yes, that's a good dream, and I'm not knocking it. If you got it, go for it. But also have you a backup plan with at your education is all I'm saying.
Absolutely.
That's right. And you know what I like what you said, Dr. Williams, is that, you know, you start off with the young people, girls, when I'm quite sure you probably talk to boys too.
Oh, absolutely. I have a son.
You know, and letting them know that, you know, they are human beings full of stories.
Yes.
And, you know, and you're so right about that. Because, you know, if we can get our young people to understand that, you know, their stories that they have inside of them count.
Yes.
That
yeah.
count. You know,
yes,
but
does.
We find and stop and get rid of fear. I think Ms. J always talk about fear, you know, getting rid of fear and things of that nature. You know, and I'm finding out that with a lot of our young people, especially our African Americans living in the hood, they're afraid to get out their stories, to talk about their stories, you know, because they are some of the most brilliant young people there is in the world, especially your younger generation these days. They are very brilliant.
Yeah.
We go around, we might talk about our young people, you know, with their pants hanging down, with this and that and all of that, but we don't take the account to where as though that these people, these young people are so brilliant. You know, they know right now we in a different time zone. You know, everything is computerized and everything of that nature. Me, myself, I don't know how to use my cell phone. Okay? But you know what I'm saying? You can take a little kid, 14 years old, with his walking around there with his pants hanging, and ask him to show you how to use that cell phone. His parents could do that, his uncles, his grandmother, his whoever, and ask him to show him and build some worth. They might decide to start pulling their pants up. You hear me what I'm saying?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I agree. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I know it's a different, same subject, but I saw an interview with a gentleman from The Wire, and he's opened some grocery stores in Louisiana. He said, in order to get people off the streets, you got to give them a job. You got to give them a choice. And you know, when you don't, you know, piggybacking on what both of you said, you have to give these kids a choice. Because sometimes there's not a person in their household, and no disrespect, no one's giving them a choice, so they don't know how to pass that on to their child. So maybe you being a mentor or someone, a neighbor or whatever, a cousin, uncle, you can be that person. You know, we got to teach them that they have choices, and I think that's a big factor. And for the older cats, like, you know, coming out of jail or just older people that's been on the streets, they need work. Either they're gonna create work, or they're gonna have a job. And a lot of them, you know, they say, well, we don't have a job, so we're gonna create work. It's negative work, but at the same time, like John's saying, they're intelligent enough to know that they got to do something. And then, you know, most drug dealers ain't dumb. I mean, they smart. You know, so I'm not, you know, condoning drug dealing, but I'm just saying, agree with what John said. They're not dumb cats. You know, they're not just empty-headed guys. They're just misguided with their energy.
Right. And I think and one of the things that I want to, you know, to go back to for a minute is this notion of, number one, options, and number two, what it is that our kids aspire to be, right? And they aspire to be what they are surrounded by. I mean, when you look at who are the people that are, you know, the media, you know, glamorizes, sensationalizes, that the role models that our kids see, that they are, I mean, inundated with, are the athletes, are the, you know, the entertainers. And as you said, these are people who in their own right have a standard of excellence, and they have perfected and are working hard at their craft. So I think the first thing is that when you look at the, you know, the entertainers and the sports, a lot of the sports celebrities, they're working hard. This is not something that has come overnight without a significant amount of effort. But needless to say, it is still that this is what our kids grow up seeing. And they don't see, you know, we don't elevate the other professions that are out there also doing extremely positive and meaningful work, whether it's teachers, whether it's police, whether it's physicians, whether it's lawyers, whether it's engineers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they don't, they don't achieve the prominence in the media, and I feel like, you know, the media has to do a much better job at really understanding the responsibility that comes with having this wide access to our kids and promoting things that are positive and making sure that our kids are exposed to positive things all the way around. And so when I look at even, you know, and I'll bounce back between girls and kids of color, right? Because for girls, when you look at what is the most important factor in girls choosing science, technology, engineering, and math, is having someone who looks like them that does it, because that models for them that it can be done. The same thing, and the reason that I decided to start writing books was that for my son in the library, and there were no kids of color in these books. When you look at the data, when you look at the statistics, you know, less than 5% of books that were children's books, of the 3,000 children's books that were published in 2012, less than 5% of them had children of color as the main characters. And so that's huge.
Right.
That says when you speak to little Johnny, who may be in a household where parents are not educated and they don't necessarily know, you know, to be able to, you know, pass on to their kids the importance of reading, the importance of, you know, education, et cetera, and you don't have books where little Johnny can look at and see, okay, well, here's an option for me. I mean, this person in this book looks like me, so if this person in this book is doing it, it must mean that I'm valuable, that I can do something similar, that the author of this book is somebody who looks like me, and they're a doctor, or they're an engineer, or they're a lawyer, or they're a teacher. Oh, so that means even though my mom is not telling me directly that I can do it, I'm looking at the books around me, and I'm seeing those images that say to me, even if my mom is not doesn't know enough to say this is who you can become, I am surrounded and I am seeing images that say, yes, I can be that. And so that's what Dr. Didi Dynamo is also about, is about promoting. And it's not a figment, you know, she's not a figment of the imagination. As you said in the beginning, Ms. J, she is a part of who I am. So that when a kid sees, or Dr. Didi Dynamo, Super Surgeon on the Go, you know, they don't dismiss it as, oh, that's just another fantasy that can't be me. They get to see, oh, well, this is written by a black female surgeon who is out here, you know, being a role model. And if she can do it, this Dr. Didi Dynamo is, wow, she's a surgeon. Well, the author is a surgeon. Well, wow, she's doing multiple things. I can do multiple things. We all have all these different gifts and talents. Your talent might be, you know, in sports, but your talent may also be, you know, that you can be a teacher or a doctor or a lawyer. You may have multiple talents. You can be a star baseball player, and you can, you know, get a PhD at the same time. I mean, it's so. I'm saying that you do not have to be limited to this notion that it should feel. And I want our kids to understand that if you have a gift and a talent as a basketball player, it is not an either or. It's not mutually exclusive. You don't have to choose that over your education. You don't have to choose you know, over also developing, you know, a profession so that when you are no longer playing basketball, or when, you know, not every, I mean, the percentage of kids who play basketball who actually make it to the quote-unquote majors or professional basketball where that becomes their livelihood, I mean, it's small, right? It's small. So what are you going to do? How are you going to integrate all of your talents to make sure that you are optimizing and you are realizing and maximizing your potential?
And you know what? You make a valid point. You know, I think that's why back in the day the Cosby Show was so major. Because it showed a father's a doctor. They had all these kids, and they were having regular people problems. And I think during that time period, and regardless of what's going on with him now, during that time period, a lot of black kids were going to college. Going to college was big then, you know, because they went to a different world. And we said, oh, wow. So it was like it's doing exactly what you were saying, showing through media, look, you can do this. You can go here. And all those kids came from different backgrounds.
Yes.
Yeah. You're right,
Ms. J. You're absolutely right about the media.
Right. You're 100% right. I like that. I like that what you say. But also, I wanted to point out this here to Dr. Williams. You know, what I'm hearing from you is not also you a role model to the children, but you're teaching them how to think.
Yes, yes, you have hit the nail on the head. It is a mindset.
Right.
Yes.
You know, you're teaching them how to think. I had an experience about maybe 6 months ago. I was at my local grocery store, and I was trying to, dial out. But my phone got stuck, and it was a young man in the back. I was in line. A young man was in line with me, and I said, you know how to work this phone? I said, my phone is stuck, and I don't know how to, you know, get it unstuck. So he said, sure, you know. So the guy, he cut it off, cut the phone off and cut it back on. He got unstuck. And I told him something. I said, you know one thing? I said, you know, why don't you go ahead on and start your little business? How to, go in people's homes and showing them how to use their cell phone.
Yeah, yep.
You know, especially old people like me. And you
know
one thing? He started laughing. He said, oh, you're not old. He said, I said, I'll tell you what, I'm going to give you my number. You let me know if you got. I said, start off with your grandma, your mama, your aunt, your aunts and uncles and everything. Start showing them how to use their phone. Don't you know that little boy called me? He wasn't no more than about 17 years old. He called me and he said, guess what? I didn't show at least about 6 people how to use their phone. And each one of them gave me $10 apiece.
Look at that.
Look at that. And now he can just start having, I'm having media classes in my mom's living room. You want to come learn your phone? Start charging at the door.
But that's
really awesome, John. That's awesome. Because he probably never thought of that.
He wouldn't have thought of that.
The kid, And now he got a business.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
You know, this is what made me think about what you doing, Miss Williams, and also you too, Miss J, you know, is that you guys teaching them how to think, because that little boy never would have thought of that unless if I wouldn't have told him. And another thing too, now Miss J been in the communities, and Dr. Williams, I'm quite sure you've been into communities and things of that nature, but it's not enough. I'm gonna be honest with you. Is not enough of our rich and educated black men and women coming into the communities and being role models. And that's true. We need way more. We need more because the communities are hurting, you know, with especially our young people, you know. And I really respect you a lot for doing that. You know, because it's not in your case, Miss Williams. I know it's not about the money because you're a doctor. You just say that your husband is a doctor, you know, and it's not about the money with you guys. It's about love.
Yeah, it is about giving back. And one of the things that I, in agreeing wholeheartedly with what you're saying is that this mindset that I am, really embracing and sharing is this notion of, you know, developing these habits of positivity, right? And my feeling about the first habit of positivity that's part of this entire framework that I've been developing is that there is always a solution. And I say that, you know, to connect it to what you said, John, because we have a whole number, we have a plethora of challenges in our community. And we will hear people complaining about them from every which angle. And my feeling is that if each of us brings our gift to bear, right, because there is a solution, there is always a solution. You tell me about a problem, and I say to you that we can find a solution. And part of the solution requires that every one of us that has some little thing that we can do to reach into that community, to give back, to create an opportunity, to create another avenue, to create another way of thinking. You know, don't tell me about the problems. Yes, I listen to the problems, but my response to the problem is that there is a solution, and let's find that solution. And I think that if we approach our life from, you know, not only what I'm trying to share and to, you know, inculcate into the kids, but we as adults, as part of our community, that we come at these challenges with the mindset of that there is a solution, there is a solution. We just have to find it instead of, you know, embracing what is a very negative perception. Like you complain, you complain, you complain, you blame, you blame, you blame, but you never actually then come to what am I going to do? What am I going to do to make this better?
Mm-hmm.
And we always say that on our show. John and I always say that, even in our posts, that we have to take responsibility. We know the problems exist, but it's up to us to make the changes. I think I said it last week. You know, we can't complain. We can't keep pointing the fingers. We got to step it up.
Yeah, it has to start with us. It has to start with us.
We have to set it up. That's right. You know, that's just like, you know, you got right down the street, you know, and this happens. This happens in real life. I'm saying this is a scenario, but this happens in real life. Right around the corner from your house, there's a building going up. And you pass around there in your car, you drive. Oh, they're doing, they're building something right here. I wonder what that is. You know what I'm saying? If you go to your city councilor meetings and find out what's going on in your communities, you wouldn't have to say that. That's why I always tell people it's so important to start going to your city councilor meetings. Get involved in your communities. Find out what's going on. Because no telling what can happen. You know what I mean? They done passed the weed law in California. They might go ahead on and put a dispensary right in the back of in the next street from my house. And you have a... You hear me what I'm saying? And you have the, you have the say-so whether you want it there or not, you know, if you go to your city councilor meetings, you know, get involved, you know? And,
go ahead, John, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, that's all I have to say, get involved.
But, and piggybacking on what John was saying, too, start submitting, if you go to these council meetings and you're an entrepreneur that you do cement or you build things or whatever, you're a construction worker, you can put your bid in for these jobs. You know, a lot of times people say, it takes too much work, but we got to start putting these bids in and let them know that we can do this work too in our own neighborhood. You know,
yeah,
that's
right.
The other flip side of attending those type of meetings as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And this notion of nothing ventured, nothing gained. But you don't make assumption that someone is going to say no or you're not going to get it. You just have to,
That's right.
You know, you got to ask.
Amen.
You have to ask.
That's
you
right.
have to submit. You have to try.
That's right. Well, anyway, we got a caller. Want to either elaborate on something or ask you a question, Dr. Williams.
Okay.
Let's let him in. Caller, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hello, Tommy Cole, Lake Charles, Louisiana.
Hey, Tommy.
Hey, Tommy.
Hello. Hello, Mr. John Hill Brown, Mrs. Jay Allen, and Dr.
Hey.
Williams. How y'all doing? Hey, look,
awesome.
I am listening in to you guys' conversation, and you guys are in the heart of the matter, our biggest issue in the black community. And I respect you so much, Dr. Williams, for what you said about, you know, we have basketball courts or, you know, playgrounds all in the hood, okay? And there's only a small percent, like you said, is going to make the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
But in every community of ours, you find basketball courts.
Hmm.
And you find many, many youth spend most of their time there.
Mm-hmm.
They don't make the NBA. And they've done like I've done myself. I was in the playground too long when I was coming up, you know. And I actually believe that we need more educational programs. In the neighborhood, programs that's going to prepare our youth with skills.
Right? Yes.
And then we'll see the percentage of success go higher than what it is now. I took my hat off to you guys because the issue that you guys are dealing with, I mean, if we go in like that and bring in programs where kids are get skilled in a profession and get there and further their education, I mean, hey, we'll be so awesome as a nation, man.
That's
we'll be
right.
hard to stop.
That's right.
So,
you're 100%
thank you, and I thank you. Yes, and I thank you all. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling, Tommy.
Thank you.
You know, he made a good point. And also, you know, we're creating leaders. And that's something that, you know, in decades we have truly lacked, like, leaders. We had a hand, we had Reverend, then you had Al Sharpton. I mean, we've had no, you know, leadership growth. And we need to do that. We need that, you know, and because I think that's our biggest problem, that we're looking for leadership outside of us. And we have the ability to be leaders ourselves. So, you know, teaching these youth how to think for themselves, be self-reliant, have healthy self-esteem, we're creating leaders, and we really need that.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Also, I wanted to ask Dr. Williams, explain to the audience what your children book is about. I know you say it's about science and math and stuff. Let the audience know some of the stuff that's in your book that's making a difference in children's lives in the communities.
Sure. So Dr. Dee Dee Dynamo is a girl super surgeon, and she's a superhero whose her superpowers comes from electrical energy. She lives with her family on the island of positivity. And so she goes around the universe fixing things, always with some type of surgical fix. And so she's a little brown girl, and the notion and the whole objective and goal is to show, number one, that girls can be powerful and they can save the world, and two, that children of color are powerful, that we do have the ability to be surgeons and doctors and superheroes. So those were in you know, introducing the diversity into children's books. And so the content of the books, her missions are always based on some type of scientific concept. And so let's say, for instance, the first book was Mission to Pluto, and Pluto was really, really sad that it had been downgraded to a dwarf planet. So the books explore, you know, why was Pluto, what are planets? Why are planets planets? What are the criteria that determines what is a planet? Why was Pluto downgraded? How, well, thinking about gravitational forces and ellipses. So what it does, what I say, it buries the medicine in the brownie, right? So it's bringing kids into reading, bringing kids into science in this fun and fantastical way, and literally at the same time, they are engaging in it in a way where they're exposed to the science, but they're not even realizing that they're learning because they're so caught up and they're so excited about the adventure, and so they develop an affinity and a love for science. They develop an ease and a comfort with scientific material. They develop, you know, a love of reading because you have this exciting, fun, you know, adventure that pulls them in. I say that the book grows with kids because the illustrations are very vibrant and lively, so that the younger kids, the one-year-olds, you know Dr. Dee Dee, they know she's saving somebody. And just when you just really think about just the visual, right, you think about all the subliminal messages that get downloaded and encoded into our brain without anyone even saying a word. So when you really think about how when kids see something and how that is internalized and how that actually will impact on how they see the world. I mean, Dr. Dee Dee Dynamo is about, you know, all of those type of sort of, as I said, exposure. So you're exposing kids to the science, you're exposing them to the reading, but at the same time, you're, you know, presenting all of these subliminal messages about who is valuable, about your worth, about the fact that you can do anything. Her tagline is not even the sky is the limit, meaning that you are limited, that there's nothing that limits you, and how you believe in yourself, and you believe that no matter what the problem is, that there is a solution, and that you're going to go after it. And so all of these things, I mean, I have a big vision, right? And so all of these things are encapsulated into this character, into this book, into how she interacts with her parents and her grandparents. You know, this notion of community, that, you know, we're not just nuclear families, mom, dad, and the kids. You know, you have this extended family that supports and that supports one another and that believes in one another, and how important it is, you know, for parents to be a part of that sharing section that says to your children, you can do it, that you sit and you read with your kids, and that even in the journey of just sort of you reading with your kids, parents also learn something from it. So the books are not just designed just for the limited, you know, so understanding of kids. It's also the parents learn, because my philosophy is that if the parents are learning, then they're more likely to be interested and you know, willing to engage with their kids, that they're both answering the questions together. It piques their curiosity. It, you know, challenges them to ask questions. It challenges them to see things differently. It challenges them to learn a new word. You know, people will say to me, oh, but the text is too complex for a picture book. And I say exactly what you said earlier, John, that these kids, they're I mean, forget 14, they're 5, they're 2, and they can turn on the cell phone and they can program it and they
That's
can find
right.
I mean, I see the 2-year-olds with the, they you know, they can manipulate that cell phone without big, and you tell me that we cannot push our kids with vocabulary because, you know, they can't understand it? Absolutely not. We will not dumb
That's
things
right.
down for our children. We will allow them to rise to the level. We will set the bar where, you know, they rise instead of just, you know, we keep them just sort of, you know, diminished in and limited by these expectations, right? So I will always come to you with an expectation because I know that you can meet and you can rise to the challenge rather than assume that you can't do it and set the bar so low that essentially you never meet what is your potential. So that's what Dr. Didi Dynamo and the books are about. And it just keeps, as I said, it just keeps challenging, it keeps entertaining, it keeps getting kids excited about science, about reading and believing and empowering and setting the role models that tells our kids, girls, kids of color, and frankly, I say all kids because ultimately we have to expose, we have to have a diversity of exposures for all kids, right? This is not just about girls, it's not just about black kids. It is about all kids seeing this character and coming to understand that this is the norm, that there's nothing unusual about a black girl being powerful or being a superhero, about being a surgeon, about being a scientist, that this is the lens through which we view the world. And when you do that, you begin to chip away at these unconscious biases that form from so early because, by and large, kids get these messages.
Amen.
The majority of kids get these messages that, oh, this is not important because we don't even see them in books. This person is not important because they're not valuable. We don't even see them represented. We show them that we are all capable of excellence, and this becomes a standard. And so when you have a world perspective that all people of all colors and all genders bring something valuable to the table and all have something to offer, we create a better world for our children and for ourselves.
Right.
That is absolutely true. And, you know, that is so powerful. You know, and that was one of the reasons why I started sharing a African-American children author on my Kids Space page, because they kept saying there's no books for black kids.
Mm.
So I made it my mission. I think I've been doing now for about 3 years. I know I've shared your book, that I make sure that I share a book every week.
Yeah, you do,
because,
Jay, you sure do. You've been
you
doing
know,
that
because,
for a while.
Yeah, thank you, John. Because I figure if you say it ain't out there, I'm going to show you that it is.
That's
if
right.
you don't know how to find it, I'm going to bring it to you.
That's right. That's right.
You know, because reading is, you know, I love video games. I'm not a big video game player, but I respect it. But it is, we've gotten away from reading. We've gotten away from the basic.
The fundamental. Reading is the cornerstone of all literacy. If you can't read, I don't care how much other video games are said, reading is the fundamental. It is the basic. It allows you to learn how to process, how to think, how to think critically, how to ask questions, how to imagine. It opens your mind to all the possibilities. It forces you to sit and focus on one thing. I mean, it is the foundation of learning, and every single thing that we learn, you know, reading is a significant and a fundamental component of that. And so I think we do our kids a disservice when we get into this digital age where we feel that video games and digital media substitutes for the basics and the fundamentals. It absolutely,
absolutely.
Cannot.
Absolutely.
You know,
I agree 110%.
You know, Dr. Williams, I wanted to say this here before it get off my mind. I remember when I was coming up, okay, we had to learn our math, you know, our timetables.
Yes.
We had to learn somebody's phone numbers.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
It wasn't
yes.
no
yes.
cell phone.
Yes.
We had to learn that. Now
yes.
these
wasn't
days,
no computer.
It wasn't no computers, right, Ms. J?
Yeah.
We had to know our timetables. And I want to ask you a question. You're a doctor. Do you think that the majority of the world is going mush brain? I call it mush brain, whereas though they can't think anymore?
I mean, I think, unfortunately, we live in an age where things and information are instantly available. I mean, it's, you know, we live in a world of instant gratification. And so consequently, you know, we don't have to think anymore. We don't have to remember. We don't memorize. We don't work. We don't challenge our brains to work. Because you on the push of a finger, you know, you blah, 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 you Google. On the push of a finger, you find this information. On the push of a finger, you know, you push button. And so our kids, and I think, you know, as adults, that's fair. But as children, it literally, I mean, robs them of the development of the skills, what I call our life skills. I remember going to the library. When you want to have a research project, you have to go to the library. You got to find the you got to go through the indices. You have to find the encyclopedia. You have to find the books. Then you have to go to the books. I mean, it creates a habit, right? And it's a work habit, and I think it creates a work ethic that trains you as to how you work for something. And I think, unfortunately, in this digital age where our children are not developing these habits, you know, it robs them of their resourcefulness, right? I mean, you know, let me say common sense is not so common anymore. It robs them of their ability to think, to innovate, to use their resources, you know, to find the workaround, to find, you know, alternative ways, to find alternative resources. I mean, our children are not doing those things anymore because everything is instantly available, and you develop this expectation that, oh, well, geez, I don't have to work for it. I just do X, Y, and Z, and it immediately appears. And so when we talk about this notion of, you know, people talk about the, you know, increased diagnosis of ADHD and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and so on and so forth, and we, you know, there have been so many articles that have identified that video games and these early exposures to the computers and to the constant screen is a huge part of it, because these kids' brains do not get a chance to rest. They don't know how to sit in their mind and to think and to focus. The stimuli, when you think about a video game, you think about a digital device, and you think about all of the messaging and the pixels and the lighting and all of these messages that are constantly bombarding our children's brains, and then we wonder, why can't they focus? Because they are accustomed to everything, this constant stimulus, constant. It's like, and then when you ask them to just sit quietly for a minute, their brain does not know how to do that. The brain cannot slow down. It can, and so it is a huge problem. It is a huge problem, I think, for our, you know, this younger generation, and we have got to figure how to turn this tide of feeling that our entire existence must be replaced by a device.
Amen.
Yeah. You know,
hey,
remember how you used to play outside, you had to be in before the lights come on?
Yes.
Kids don't get to play outside no more. Everybody's on a computer, a laptop, or cell phone.
Yeah.
Even in the library, because I love the library, and I go to the library, and they'll sit in the library and play their games on their cell phone.
Yes.
And touch one book, and they could be in there for hours playing games.
Absolutely. And they can hardly talk
Amen.
To one another. They're texting. They'll sit next to each other, and they're texting. You said, have a conversation. You know,
okay,
read the body language.
I don't want to stop everybody. I know everybody is, I mean, this is just so much of a great talk show today, but we only got a minute and a half left on the show. And so I'm asking Ms. J to start closing us out.
Well, first of all, thank you, Dr. Williams, for joining us. It was a great show. I learned some things, and I really do appreciate you coming on, sharing your book with us, and just your knowledge. It was a blessing. If you had one thing positive to say before we rush off, what would that be to the audience?
What I would say to the audience is that life is full of opportunities. When you're confronted with a challenge and something negative, turn it around into an opportunity. Turn it around into something that motivates you. Turn it around into something that empowers you to go beyond that challenge or limit that seems that it is put there to confine you. Push back against it and use it as an opportunity to empower you.
Absolutely. And Mr. John L. Brown.
Yes, number one, I want to thank Dr. Williams for coming on the show. I've learned so much. And thank you, just I can't say thank you enough for doing what you're doing in the communities. And with that said, back to you, Ms. J.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Mr. Tommy, for joining the conversation. And until next week, just remember, together we'll make a difference. Peace and blessings.
Thank you, guys. And thank you guys for having
you.
Me. This is wonderful. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay,
thank you all very
day.
Much. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.